What's the 411? You're tuned into 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Joining me via phone, I welcome Denise Daniels. She hails from Minneapolis. Denise Daniels is a Peabody Award-winning broadcast journalist, parenting and child development expert who specializes in the social and emotional development of children. She shares candid information on parenting and how to instill values that stay throughout a lifetime. Denise, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Liz. I'm really looking forward to today's conversation.
Oh, same here. And as we look at parenting, I think my opening question would be to you, do you think that parenting is more challenging today in 2015 than it was in 2000 or 1980?
I think that's a great question, and I'm glad you've asked it because I've been a parenting expert for a really long time, started on the Today Show, and the kind of segments we were doing based on what our viewers at home wanted to learn about was simple things like how do you potty train your child, how do you set limits with your kids, and not that they're not relevant subjects, but nowadays, if you fast forward 30 years, because I'm like 100 years old, but
join the club.
But, you know, parenting, the rules of parenting have changed. Mm-hmm. Kids are, first of all, with the technology, kids are on a much faster track than we've ever seen them before, and I know all parents can relate to that. And secondly, our kids are growing up in a different world. It's a fast-changing, ever-changing world now. And kids are being confronted with issues that we never had to deal with all those years ago. And so kids are seeing graphic depictions on the news of what's happening in foreign countries, what's happening in our country, and kids need information. And oftentimes parents will say to me, you know, I don't know how to talk to my kid about this. You know, they're seeing it on the news, they're talking about it at school. But what do we say to our children about what's going on in the world around them? Because we have to be the one that teaches our children how to interpret the world around them. And if we don't do it, they're going to get it somewhere else. So we want to do it with our own values, right?
Indeed.
Does that make sense?
Indeed. And in that same mindset, you know, what kinds of changes do you see with parents than 30 years ago? I mean, for example, I think today's parents, and you can correct me if my perception is wrong, but they're younger. Mm-hmm. In many ways, less experienced. We have more single parenting. The environment is much more treacherous, has a lot more pitfalls. So do you see those kinds of changes with parents also?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Back in the day, moms were homemakers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a really long time ago, but moms were able to stay home, you know. Now we've got parents sometimes working two or three jobs. And so if you look at that and you think, wow, can you imagine being a parent, trying to juggle everyone's different schedules, trying to go to work, you come home and you're tired, and, you know, it's not easy to be a parent nowadays. I mean, I'm a grandmother now, so I look at my daughter who has a full-time job, and she works really, really hard and has a lot of responsibility, and she's expecting her other baby. Mm-hmm. But I look at her, and I look at her life, and I compare it to when I was raising her, and it's completely different.
Indeed.
And the other thing is that we don't have a support system for our parents like a lot of other countries do. We just don't. Child care is expensive, you know. It's hard to find good places for our kids to be, safe places.
Indeed.
You know, you mentioned that earlier.
The composition, I mean, of the family, I mean, the external family, you know, was much more involved. okay?
Yes.
At least when we were coming up, okay?
Yes.
And now,
like,
because
Hillary Clinton saying it takes a village.
Right. Now,
you know, and it used to take a village. Now many grandparents are raising, you know,
exactly.
children.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
yeah.
we need to be open to helping and supporting all kinds of parenting, whether it's, you know, same-sex parenting, whether it's, you know, you see, there's such a yeah. variety of what it means to be a family nowadays, right?
Exactly. Yes, indeed it is.
Mm-hmm.
As you think about parenting, what would you identify as some of the dangers or the pitfalls that are out there that parents have to negotiate and maneuver?
I think the most glaring at this point is the internet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, our children are texting and Facebooking and Instagram and probably things I haven't ever heard of because of my age. But, you know, I think that it's been a major distraction. And not only is it a distraction for kids, it's teaching them that everything is in an instant. Instantaneous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Immediate gratification.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for parents, we have to be involved. We have to stay one step ahead of our children.
Mm-hmm.
We have to set limits. We have to talk to them about the safety of bullying online, of, you know, predators, all these terrible things that we never had to deal with before. And you know, I know a lot of parents that check their kids' texts, and they say, if you want to text, that's fine, but I'm going to check every text so that they're not sending out things that would be dangerous, not sharing personal information. But if we aren't involved in that and we don't have information, and besides the fact that it's a whole different language that we don't even know and understand,
yes.
You know, that takes a lot of time and commitment to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, to me, is the number one thing other than keeping our children safe, but this is another way in which we're trying to keep our kids safe.
Well, in addition, one thing that I find that I encounter and kind of makes me cringe, but I want to get your reading on it, is these parents who want to be friends. Well, you know, I just want to be friends. I mean,
yeah, you can be friends later. They need a parent, right?
I'm glad to hear you say that. But, you know, you encounter that a lot. A lot of parents feel like they want to be friends. And when you look at the parent physically, I think of some mothers who dress like their teenage daughters. Or,
right. Right. I mean, I completely agree with you. I think parents need to be parents. They're the adults. Our children are our kids. And there has to be a differentiation in that. They look to us to set boundaries and to teach them about the world around them.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to have expectations of our children, because if we lower our expectations, that's about as far as our kids will get, right? We want to be sure and have high expectations of them and teach them along the way. We need to be good role models, not their best friends.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to do tough love with your kids, especially when they get to adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very challenging time. Look at kids developmentally when they're going into high school, or middle school. These kids are trying to become autonomous and independent. But yet we want them to make as many mistakes while they're still living under our own roof so we can give them guidance as possible.
And how do you do that? I mean, do you take a laissez-faire kind of approach? Or are you authoritarian and, you know, rule with an iron fist and a leash?
No.
I mean,
no.
What do you do?
There has to be a halfway medium, because you have to be an engaged, involved parent. And when I say engaged, that doesn't mean sitting on your cell phone or being at the park with your kids or some activity and you're sitting in the bleachers and you're looking at your iPhone and texting people too. Kids that are in that age group, the studies are showing that they need a parent to be with them and be supportive more so than our little ones.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
And so we can't just leave it to chance that, oh, you know, they're in high school now. I'm not going to hug them as much. I'm not going to affirm as much. You know, I don't need to do that because they're older. No, they need all the affirmations and support and empathetic listening we can possibly provide, more then than ever before.
Well, one of the difficulties that I see in parenting, again, is this nuclear family and the village. We don't take advantage,
right,
or we don't have, you know, that extended family. I mean,
yes,
we may live miles away from grandparents and relatives, mm-hmm, whereas when we were growing up, we had that support. What do parents do in light of not having those connections?
You know, there are other places you can get connections,
mm-hmm,
a place of worship.
Okay.
I mean, I was a single mom, so I can relate to how difficult it is when you're a single parent. I don't know if there's a harder job on the face of the earth. And so, you know, we have to look for outside resources, whether it's a Boys and Girls Club, mm-hmm, whether it's, you know, the community center, whether it's your place of worship. Churches are great places or synagogues for kids to have youth activities. Service organizations. It's wonderful to get kids involved in volunteering at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of high schools are requiring that for graduation now, which I love that because it teaches kids to get out of themselves and to, you know, care about the world around them, about being empathetic and giving back. So I think there are resources that are out there. We may have to look a little bit harder.
Mm-hmm.
I think keeping grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins involved through Skyping
FaceTime.
FaceTime,
mm-hmm,
or Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all ways that, you know, can keep families connected.
Oh,
I agree. I Skype with my little one, and,
mm-hmm,
and it augments being so far apart because they're in Seattle. And so I don't want her to forget who Grammy is. So we Skype, and that's a great way to stay connected.
And that's good to hear, because I think parents need to be reminded,
mm-hmm,
of that, you know, that we just have to be creative and find other ways.
There are a lot of good resources out there. It just takes time, you know, to look for those resources.
Right. You tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a break, and we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me is Denise Daniels. Denise hosted her own daily parenting show, Parents Helper, on NBC's cable network. She's also appeared on numerous morning and primetime TV shows, including Oprah and The View. Denise, I had to interrupt you. We had to take a brief break.
That's okay.
But you want to continue your thought?
You know, I was thinking, I lived away from my, and I hate to keep talking about myself, but we lived away from my family. We didn't have a lot of family support. Everything was long distance, and it was,
mm-hmm,
challenging because we were moving to different parts of the country throughout childhood. And one of the things that I learned is, what is the definition of family?
Right.
I mean, you
exactly.
can make friends that become as close as your family,
mm-hmm,
members. Right?
Right.
And you can rely on each other, and you can trust each other, and you can be there for each other. And so I think that moms groups, parenting groups, one of the things that we did when our kids were in high school is we started a parenting group for moms. And there were about 15 of us, and we'd meet once a month, and we'd, mm-hmm, talk about the kids and what's happening. Is their prom coming up? Are, you know, are parents going to be out of town next weekend? Is there an issue that somebody needs help with? You know, and it was a support group during a time that we really needed it because, you know, we all had teenagers. And it's kind of like misery loves company, right?
Right. That's
no, I'm
true.
Kidding. But,
no.
You know, it was great. And then after that, a lot of different support groups started within the high school.
Mm-hmm.
dad support groups were starting, and they all got together and would talk about whatever issues, you know, that they needed to address with their sons. And so there are ways to find that support. But
yeah.
Working moms have a harder time, I think, because they're spread so thin in our society today.
Mm-hmm.
And just not just moms, but dads as well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just really hard to find that time. So when you are with your child, you have to be sure you're really engaged. That's
exactly
important.
I'm glad to hear you say that and reinforce that position, because being engaged,
yes.
and you said this earlier, is not attending their football game or their soccer game and sit there
yes.
and be on your phone
right.
or be texting or have even have your computer there with you.
Yes.
And I think that's
your
so
iPad.
Important.
Yes.
I've seen that in so many situations.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents are feeling like, well, I'm here. And they're watching what's going on and keeping the score. And then they're kind of texting here. And I know they're multitasking. That's
mm-hmm.
what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
But,
and we've all been there. And when you're busy, sometimes
mm-hmm.
that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, don't think that your kid isn't watching you from the field
exactly.
or whatever activity they're in. Out of the corner of their eye, they always are looking to see if you're paying attention.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I used to say to parents, all you need to do is show up.
Mm-hmm.
Now I
Mm-mm.
say to parents, all you need to do is show up, but be engaged.
Right.
Be present with your child.
Indeed. As we think about these various systems that our kids are exposed to,
mm-hmm.
think about the educational system. And instead of me asking you what's wrong with it, I think I'm going to take a different approach and say, from your perspective, you've had a child that's been through it and now a grandparent. What do you think is right with the educational system? What are we doing right that maybe we could improve on, as opposed to looking at it from that negative perspective of everything that a parent may be doing is wrong? Because, you know, for so many years, often the parent was seen as the bad guy, the culprit, the cause of all the problems that these kids may have. And even though parenting is a very very influential and important role. Parents don't do all of it. You know, they're in school 7-8
right.
hours. What do you think about the overall educational system?
Boy, that's really an interesting topic, because last week I had the privilege of visiting a school in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wonderful school that used the RULER method, which is, it's an acronym that stands for recognize, understand,
mm-hmm.
label, express, and regulate.
Hmm.
So it's an acronym that really describes the work we're trying to do with kids and teaching them emotional intelligence skills. And the administrator of this school was one of the most amazing women I've ever met. And these little children that came to school were meditating. These were kids that came out of some pretty tough, you know, circumstances,
mm-hmm.
whether it was some of the kids had been bullied and some of the kids, you know, didn't have family systems that were working in a healthy way. And they were in this school, and I could not believe how peaceful and respectful and caring, and the children were so kind to one another. And I looked at the school, and it was a Thurwood Marshall school
mm-hmm.
in Harlem, and I looked at these children, and I came away thinking, wow, this is a model for every school in America.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's happening is we've put a lot of focus on STEM,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
You know,
right.
STEM,
yeah.
science,
technology.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that's really important. But for me, when I visit schools, I'm looking to see how are they emotionally supporting the students.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not supporting those students, then they're not going to be ready to come to school to learn and grow. You don't know what's happened to that child
exactly.
at home or what kind of day they've had with their friends at school.
Mm-hmm.
but we haven't really recognized the importance of teaching children emotional intelligence skills. And whereas IQ is fixed at birth, EQ, emotional intelligence, can grow throughout a lifetime.
Right.
And so I know, too, I see the other side of it for teachers and administrators. They work very long hours. They have very large classes in most circumstances. You know, they have large classes. A lot of teachers that I know, they pay for their own supplies for school.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really have the time to take the training that they need. And budgets are cut. Special ed is cut, gymnastics, the arts, all of the things that I think when you're developing young human beings should be included. And when I look at the level of anger or bullying or some of the issues that we're dealing with in society right now and trying to, you know, navigate our way through this, so much could be helped by teaching children emotional intelligence skills such as respect and tolerance and empathy, which is such an important emotional intelligence skill, and kindness. And those are the kind of skills that if kids learn them at a very early age, they'll take them throughout their lifetime.
But it seems like, not to interrupt you, but let me just interject this in there. I agree with you 110%, but the environment are not conducive to this. Because, you know, really, if you think about it, don't you think that we are raising insensitive children? I see that we are, now there may be exceptions, there may be pockets here and there, but it seems like we are raising very insensitive children. And also it's because of the environment. It's because of what's on television. It's because of what's around them. People die. It's no big deal, you know.
Yeah, you become desensitized to what you see it on the news
right.
so much.
That's right.
No, I agree. Empathy is a skill that you can teach at a very... I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead. No.
No, empathy is a skill you can start teaching in preschool.
Right.
And that's a very important skill because if you look at kids that turn out to be self-absorbed or, I hate to use the word, clinical word, narcissistic.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at these kids, they're kids that really don't care about anyone else. They're pretty self-absorbed. And their world revolves around them. Well, empathy is a learned behavior. And how do we teach that? We model it as parents. We should always be modeling the behavior, the behavior we desire from our children.
Yeah, but what are parents modeling? You know, we have these parents getting mad with coaches and going out on the playing field and, you know, having you know, fits.
Yes.
And that's what the kids are seeing. We have parents getting upset and going to school and raising hell. You know, we reduce relationships down to physical. Well, I guess we don't have physical fights anymore now. We just blow each other away. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I think we still do have physical fights, but you know, and there is bullying, and we have to look for the signs and symptoms of that. But I agree with you completely. I think that it's up to the parent and it's up to the teachers. And I think, I mean, I heard a staggering statistic that over 30% of kindergarten teachers report that children, the preschoolers, are coming to school lacking the social and emotional skills they need to be successful.
Yeah,
that's
I've
a pretty
read that.
High percentage
yes.
of kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess that's why I feel so strongly about parents giving kids a vocabulary for what they're feeling, for their emotions, and using a language in their home that is saturated with wonderful feelings words. So kids get comfortable, you know, with words that describe their emotions.
Exactly.
And we teach little ones, you know, there are no right or wrong feelings. All feelings are okay. If we can teach kids how to hang how to handle powerful feelings like anger and sadness. Mm-hmm. I mean, kids that, all the research out of Yale is showing that kids that have these kinds of skills, that know how to manage, how to first understand it, and then manage emotions, these kids are less prone to depression. They score higher on standardized tests. They have more quality relationships. So there are a number of reasons, you know, lower juvenile delinquency.
Oh, yes.
There are a number of reasons that I'm a proponent of teaching those kinds of skills in schools in the earlier, early childhood, really.
Yeah, and as we talk about daily parenting and teaching these skills, what role does television and the internet play? Because even though we talk about getting in touch with feelings, feeling comfortable, because any emotion that you have is okay. It's how you handle it, okay?
Yes.
But if they're being, if television is serving as a major role in parenting, what happens?
Right, and that's a really good point. What we're, what the research is showing is the ideal time of a child having screen time is 2 hours a day. Now I can see parents across America rolling their eyeballs saying, oh, right.
Like, yeah, I know.
You know, it's so unrealistic.
Right.
But, again, it's for us to set those boundaries and limits with our kids. Now, I want to preface this by saying the 2 hours does not include the time the kids would spend on the internet doing homework.
Right.
And hopefully those computers are out in the kitchen or someplace, you know, where the
family. Good point.
Right?
Yes, a very good point. I'm glad to hear you say that. That the computer needs to be out in a family area.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some parents put a basket by the front door and say, you know, this is a device-free zone, you know, for the next 2 hours, or, you know, and don't take the computer to bed with you or night or be texting. Because now what we're seeing, because I'm also a pediatric nurse, so now what we're seeing is that kids are coming to school with sleep deprivation.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're up all night texting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't that scary?
Yes,
and the only real connection they're making is on Facebook. So they're not even emotionally connecting with others, with other human beings, because, you know, through technology, they're lacking the emotional piece of it, and, that's dangerous, too.
Well, what we're talking about is communicating. You know,
yes,
what form, how you communicate. And when you look at how they text, it's the language that they use. And I don't mean anything by profanity. I mean, just how they spell a word or all these abbreviations.
My goodness. But, you know, I want to circle back with that question you just asked about the role of television. Because really, I don't know if I just sound old-fashioned today or not, but I just have to say this. Some of the commercials that I see, when you know it's a time when kids are watching TV, they are so sexual.
Oh, I know.
And or violent.
Or violent, either one.
Yes, and you wonder, are our kids becoming desensitized? And they shouldn't be watching that at all. I mean, you know, it's just not good for their development. And limiting what they're seeing, and especially depending on the age of the child, is so important. But yet as parents and working parents, you know, lots of times that TV becomes a babysitter.
And you can understand
you earlier,
it. Yeah, the TV is the babysitter.
Yeah, right. So I think we just really have to look at, you know, what are our kids seeing in the video games? A lot of them are just so violent.
They're horrible. Yes.
Yes. And you know, you have to know what your child is doing, what they're watching, what they're hearing, what they're seeing. I mean, it's really important.
And it's very difficult, and I think we have to really be sensitive to those parents who are wearing multiple hats. Okay.
Oh,
I mean, they're parenting and they're working and they come home. And sure, when they get home, they still have more work. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break. We'll return to continue our discussion shortly. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I have Denise Daniels from Minnesota, whose books have reached more than 15 million parents and children, offering practical and simple and essential advice on how to deal with the challenges of growing up and parenting. And Denise, you know, we were just talking about, right before we went on break, you know, the kids and television and how do we provide the skills necessary so that our children can survive and thrive in today's world?
Well, Mr. Rogers, the beloved late Mr. Rogers, always used to say, what's mentionable is manageable. And throughout my career, I've always found that to be true. Lots of times as parents, we are afraid or nervous about talking to our kids about difficult issues. And as much as we'd like to protect our kids from the harsh realities of life, kids need age-appropriate, honest communication. They need information. And who better than us to provide that information? Lots of times I work with parents that just need a script. They see something on TV that's very disturbing. They don't know if they should talk to their child about it. But it's like, you know, when you're talking to your kids about stranger danger, there's always a fine line. But what we've learned is that giving age-appropriate information, particularly to younger children to begin with, because you can talk to little ones about what they've seen or what they've heard, but you just begin by saying, you begin that conversation by saying, you know, some kids are talking about, or people on TV look really sad. Do you know what that's about? And you just build on the information that they have. And then you fast forward and you're looking at elementary kids, and for sure they're hearing about it, you know, driving home in the car with the radio on, or their friends are talking about it, or, you know, you can't assume that your child doesn't know.
Right. Yeah,
you
they know.
You want to minimize their exposure, but you need to be talking to them. And every day there's a teachable moment, sometimes several teachable moments, and you always have to be aware as a parent. You could be folding laundry, you could be, you know, putting dinner on the table, you could be sitting together, you know, they could be working on homework, and you can use that teachable moment that occurs naturally to teach what your family system believes in. What are your values? What is your faith? You know, use those as opportunities to talk to your kids and show them, you know, what your values are and how you perceive the world. And always tell them, you know, I don't always have the answers. But you don't have to have all the answers.
You don't have to have all the answers. That's great to hear you say that. Because parents don't have to have all the answers. They can always say, well,
9 times out of 10, we don't, right?
Well, you know what? Let's think about this and let's look this up and let's investigate this. You know, that's a way that you can incorporate the parent and the child, you know, as far as communication is concerned. Because communication, basically what you're saying, we're talking about communicating. And communicating is an ongoing issue. And I think in looking at communication, we have to understand that parents sometimes need to listen. Because so often I hear, you know, parents don't, you can't listen with your mouth open.
Yes, good point. That's true. Sometimes we talk too much and we don't listen enough. And and I would add to that, listening with an empathetic ear.
Yes.
So that your child tells you, even if you disagree, you validate their feelings first. And then you say, you know, like you could say, I can tell you're upset today, and I'd love to talk to you about whatever upset you at school or, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
But validate their feelings. And if they say, you know, I wasn't invited to the dance, for example, I'm just throwing that out. And you can say, oh, that must really hurt. That must feel really hurtful. you know, so the kid knows you're listening. And you can talk about a time that you experienced a similar, you know, mm-hmm. feeling of rejection or disappointment. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with sharing those experiences with your child, because that makes you relatable. And it says to the child, you know what? My mom gets it, or my dad
mm-hmm.
understands.
Mm-hmm. Plus, and I think
that's powerful.
It conveys the point that failure is okay, too. And we live in this
yes.
society, and it seems like today, that no child can fail, that they all
right.
have to be superstars, and mm-hmm. their parents want them to be on the front line. I mean,
yeah,
come
right.
on, that's not realistic. That
no,
isn't
it's
realistic.
Not fair, is
that's
it?
Not, no.
No, it puts undue pressure on the kids, and
mm-hmm.
they feel frustrated when they can't, you know, attain the accomplishments or achievement, you know, that they wish or they know that their parents expect from them or would like to see. So, you know, it ends up being a vicious circle. It isn't done intentionally. I know parents have
no.
kids' best interests,
no.
you know, at heart. But I also think you need to let your child be a kid and
Indeed.
Not make them grow up too fast and
mm-hmm.
not put pressure for them to, you know, be straight A's at school and to be president of the student council.
Right.
Be, you know, whatever it is, it's okay.
Exactly.
And today when I was, you know, I did a little thing on the Today Show, and I was talking about, we were talking about sportsmanship, and one of the things I said is, win or lose, we have to teach our children to do both with grace, and we need to model that behavior.
Well, there you go back to modeling, and that's
yeah.
where parents may have some problems today. I mean, because what they're modeling is a lack of control.
Yeah.
Often, very often.
Yes.
That's what we see.
And the other thing I do want to say to parents, it's a really difficult role.
Mm-hmm.
It's rewarding. It's worthwhile. I mean, you're raising a human being. What could be more important than that? But it is not easy. And if there's ever a parent, if you feel this way as a parent, like you're just going to blow your stack or that it's more than you can handle or cope with, there are professionals that are there to help, that want to help you and that want to support you.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because my next question was going to be, what are the signs or indicators that there is distress? Whether it's distress with the parent or distress with the child, at what
sure.
point, you know, should they seek professional help or outside help? Maybe it doesn't even have to be professional. Maybe they just need to have, you know, Uncle John be
right.
available. So are
right.
there indicators or anything that you would share?
Yes.
Okay.
I think, you know, when we see parents that lose control
mm-hmm.
of their lives and their you know, acting hostile or depressed, and they don't even recognize it. And there's a direct correlation between depression in parents and depression in kids. And so because there's that connection, we want to be sure that our parents are as healthy as can be, so they're in a position to be a positive role model for their children. And sometimes it's just talking to a friend.
Right. Right.
Or sometimes it's talking to a clergy member.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes, you know, it can be with a social worker, a psychologist, or a teacher at school. And people can make referrals. You know, I know if you call United Way, there are a number of sliding scale agencies that you can mm-hmm. find support. It can be support
right.
groups, just knowing
exactly.
that there are other parents that are experiencing the same things and where you can learn healthy strategies for coping.
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at kids, what we see is, you know, if you have a child that begins to withdraw, or maybe your child is becoming isolated and doesn't want to be with other kids, or they're having trouble with their relationships, or they're not eating, they're having sleep disturbances, they are low on energy. And if you see that, and they're like couch potatoes, or you
right.
know, they're just not engaged,
right. Right.
or the teacher calls and says, you know, Johnny's having trouble in school, or Mary hasn't
mm-hmm.
been attending class, or when she comes, you know, she spends time in the nurse's office. And if this goes on, the first thing you want to do is talk to the guidance counselor, or you want to talk to the teachers. Don't be afraid. You're all on the same team.
Right.
Find out in the beginning of the year, how would you like us to communicate? Ask the teacher, how can I support you in your role teaching my child? Is there anything you would want to know? You know, if you're going through a divorce or you're moving or, you know, you've had a death in the family, those are the kind of
things
that teachers want to know about, right?
Exactly. Yes.
We want to support them in their role in helping our children. But if you see a child and it's your child or a neighbor's child or a friend's child or a parent, reach out. Mm-hmm. Don't ignore it. Reach out to them.
Well,
Everyone loves to have a hug or somebody to empathize with them or just talk to or take their kids.
Mm-hmm.
If you see a mom that's really stressed out and she's on overload, be a friend. Go over, grab a cup of coffee and say, you know, why don't I take Susie for the afternoon so you can have an afternoon off.
Right. Well, in these last few minutes, I must have a thousand issues that I want us to address. But
oh, I know. I could talk to you forever.
But, you know, one area that's always dealt with, well, often, I won't say always, trepidation is discipline.
Yes.
So we have to talk a little bit about discipline. You know, it's a mood area, and what suggestions can you provide parents about discipline? And I know it depends on the age of the child. So,
well, I think that's a great way, you know, to end. I know, because discipline is a really touchy subject. And what exactly does discipline mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the month of April is Child Abuse Month, and so I just want to bring this up because discipline, you know, you have people that say, spare the rod, spoil the child.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at that particular scripture, it doesn't necessarily mean beat your child. It means disciple. It means shepherd your children. It means to guide them, right?
Right.
You have to look back at the period of time when that was written in what context. So it's never appropriate to hurt your child physically or emotionally.
Right.
We have to be sure that we're the kind of loving, caring parent that when we discipline, we're just showing them good examples. We're giving them strategies on how to be caring and loving and healthy human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to do that, we can't show physical violence because that is something that only teaches kids to be violent themselves.
That's right.
That's all learned behavior.
Mm-hmm.
If kids that grow up in homes where there's domestic abuse, you know, it's not uncommon for them to be perpetrators.
That's right.
So later in life. So we really want to be sensitive to that. But we also have to hold kids accountable for their actions and help them understand the consequences of the choices they make.
Yes.
So that if
and make sure the consequences are appropriate, too. You know, I have to throw that in there because I think sometimes parents, you know, the consequences don't match the action.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And another thing I've heard parents do, and it works effectively, is to sit down with your child and say, you know, based on this infraction or whatever it is that the child has done, what do you feel would be a fair punishment?
Yes.
And you engage the child.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about it.
And the child has some ownership. They feel like they, you know.
Yes.
Right. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they admit, you know, this is something I did. And, you know, when you ground a child for months and months, they forget what it was. It's like little ones going in the timeout chair. Some parents leave them in there so long they completely forget. And they're small, so they don't.
That's true.
They don't get it. So you really have to look at your child's personality, their temperament, and how serious is the infraction. And lots of times I say to parents, don't major on the minors. Choose your battles.
Right? Indeed, right.
Because
right.
nagging does not work.
No, it doesn't.
So.
Well, in these last 3 minutes or so,
yes.
Denise, talk about, I know you have a new line of toys and books that are designed to teach young children fundamentals of feelings. And I think, when are they coming out? And talk about
out the, in the beginning of August.
Okay.
And they will be sold exclusively in Target stores mm-hmm. across the country. And we're very excited because, as you said, there's been a revolution in child psychology about teaching kids emotional intelligence mm-hmm. skills. And I developed a little toy that is now used in many of the pediatric units across the country to help pediatric patients heal and
what
relate to their doctors when they're having difficult medical procedures.
Well, what is it? Share it with us.
It was the name of our program in the children's hospitals. It was developed for Pfizer Pediatrics. It was called First Aid for Feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And the good folks at Target came to me and said, you know, all kids need these. And I've been fortunate to travel all over the world and work with kids in refugee camps and underdeveloped countries. And no matter where I've been able to take my little toys that I made on my kitchen table mm-hmm. about 30 years ago with me. And no matter what, no matter what language I spoke or what country I was in, I learned that all kids' feelings are universal. So we created a line of toys based on a curriculum that was developed by Dr. Mark Brackett from Yale University that teaches children emotional intelligence skills.
Mm-hmm.
And we are so excited about it. The curriculum's wonderful, and the characters are great, and they are launching with books and with toys. And we have an app that will be launching in the middle of July to help children. These are younger children, but we believe if you want to have healthy emotional children as teenagers, you need to start in preschool.
Oh, yes.
And so we're very excited. And people can go to DeniseDanielsParenting.com or TheMoodsters.com. and get more information about the toys and the books that will be coming out and for back to school.
Okay, give us the web address again.
Yes, www.DeniseDanielsParenting.com
mm-hmm.
or you can see the characters online, and there are five little characters that are different emotions, and they jump into the real world to help real kids solve problems, their emotional problems. So that website is themoodsters.com.
Okay.
And that's how you can reach us if you need more information.
All right. Well, any closing words of wisdom that you wish to share?
My best piece of advice would just be to engage with your children and be present with them and be warm and as loving as you possibly can. And if you need more support, reach out. There are people there that want to help and want to support you in your role as a parent.
Denise, it has been real. Thanks so much, you know, for sharing that invaluable information.
Well, I would love to come back anytime. I just loved your show, and I think it's so valuable, and I hope it reaches many, many parents, and I wish them the best of luck in their role as a parent. So.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, that's it for this hour. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen Podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.